Warning, the following podcast contains coarse language and spoilers for the film and the title of the podcast.
Now playing.
Why so serious?
What is the Matrix?
Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What's in the box?
He likes scary movies.
What does Marcellus Wallace look like?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
Movie reviews in 20 Qs.
Hello, you goddamn fantastic people, and welcome to the podcast, Movie Reviews in 20 Qs, the show where we review a movie by asking 20 weird and wonderful questions about it. I am your host, Sam, and we have a very special episode for you guys today because we've brought in two of our all-stars, the first of which is Liz. How are you, Liz? It's been a while.
Oh, I am doing very well, thank you. It has actually been a little while. I'm not really sure why, just been busy, living the dream as you do.
Yes, it's definitely been your end, definitely not my end, definitely not me not booking you or anything. Yeah, that's definitely it.
Yeah, rude. I haven't been sad, actually, just to hurt your feelings right back.
Well, we almost did an episode on Tomorrow War, didn't we, Liz? Did you actually end up watching that?
No.
Good.
We'll probably get around to it, but I just haven't yet.
Don't.
Duly noted.
There goes my feelings on that film. And the other all-star, she's back from last week. Stacey, how are you, Stacey? You did Black Widow last week. You're looking at me so confused. Like,
yeah, she was just like, what are you talking about?
Who the fuck are you, stranger man?
Last week. What was I doing last week? Oh, yeah, Black Widow. Well, I'm super excited to be here again.
What about you? Have you watched anything good lately?
Not really.
Well, maybe you have. We'll soon find out, because the film that we are doing this week is Jaws, one of the most universally beloved films in film history, has a score of 8 out of 10 on IMDb, has a whopping 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 87% on Metacritic. Was the first blockbuster, like legitimately the first ever summer blockbuster, because people actually lined up around the block to go see this movie. It was the first movie to take over 100 million at the box office. That was on less than 1,000 screens across America. And if people haven't worked out this is one of my favorite films of all time, then fucking I'm obviously showing my cards here, because I know too much about this film. We normally do a plot. Normally do a plot if you guys haven't seen this film. But I was about to say, like, who hasn't seen Jaws? But Liz, you hadn't seen this.
No, I hadn't. Would you like me to do a plot?
Yeah, I'm trying to act surprised, but I'm not anymore. But yeah, Liz, give us a plot.
There's still a lot of those old school films I need to see, and I haven't got around to it. So thank God for this podcast. That's all I can say. So the plot of Jaws is relatively simple compared to some of the convoluted crap that Sam makes me watch. And
explain the room, Liz.
No one could do that. Jaws. Essentially, there's a lovely beachy island. They're hitting their summer season, and something is terrorizing the beaches, and people are being murdered, and they think it's a shark, and they have to go and stop it.
Yeah, that's it.
I actually think that's, we should point out the plot that is up on Google there. I just glanced over it. Now, listen to this. A police chief, a marine scientist, and a fisherman spring into action after a white shark. A white?
Yeah, a great white shark
terrorizes the inhabitants of Amity. I don't think spring into action is the right description for what happens.
No.
That needs to be scrapped off the internet.
Yeah. I think you need to write a strongly worded letter to Google.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a feeling, though, that whoever writes, like, plots for the internet has no idea what the fuck they're talking about. Either that, or they just put it through, like, they write the plot, they then Google translate it into Norwegian, then into Mongolian, then back to English, and then they just copy whatever fuck comes out. Because quite often it makes no sense.
Mm.
Anywho, if you haven't heard the show before, as I said, we review a movie by asking 20 weird and wonderful questions about it. We start with 10 that can be applied to any film. We then move into 3 personal questions about the film that we thought of while watching it. And then we finish on a listener question or a Patreon question. And this week it's a listener question. The one that we always start with is the compliment sandwich, which is one thing good, one thing bad, one thing good about this film. If we feel positively about it, if we feel negatively about it, we give it a shit sandwich. So we go one thing bad, one thing good, one thing bad. And Stacey, why don't you lead us off? Why don't you tell us what sort of sandwich you've got?
I've got a compliment sandwich.
Thank God.
My first good thing is I like the premise of this film. It's a good setting. It's the summer holidays. It's at the beach. It's family. You think, okay, this is cool. And that just makes me have good memories because I want to go to the beach. It's the middle of winter and I'm sick of it.
Oh, God, yes. What I wouldn't give to go to the beach right now. Oh.
Yeah.
For those playing at home, Stacey always has a bizarre comment that she makes while we're watching the film. And we were sitting there and she said, "This is actually a really nice beach."
It is a nice beach.
Aside actually, from the shark.
Swimming.
Yeah.
Because
it's the water's really calm. Like, you don't have those big crashing waves. Yep. Like, you know, you can just chill.
Good depth.
It's nice. You people have lilos. Like, you're floating around on a lilo on the beach. You can't really do that in New Zealand because our waves are too big, you know?
True. So legit call, Tracy. Tracy!
It's been so long.
That. No, but like, why the hell did my brain say Tracy? That's hilarious.
I don't know.
Oh, my Lord.
That's all right, Lisa.
Can you just delete that? Shut up, Steve. Moving on. Oh, it's like Parks and Rec. It's like Parks and Rec when everyone's like, when I feel like you guys are getting too comfortable with me, I just like to call people by the wrong name just to put them
like
off.
Larry.
Yeah.
Larry.
Yeah.
Jerry.
Like, thanks, Larry.
Yeah.
I actually have called Sam Steve on this podcast before in one of our early episodes.
That's true.
Why?
I don't know.
Just the same thing as me where the brain just goes brain fart.
I had a brain fart.
That was so weird.
I don't even know my fiance's
name. God, I hope it's
name.
A brain fart and there's not some other dude named Steve in your life somehow.
No. Okay. Anyway, moving on to my bad thing is, I don't know if it's the script or the directing or whatever, but the way the main characters just yell at each other. So you got the police chief, the mayor, and the scientist, and they just walk up to each other in the weirdest situations and just start yelling at each other. Like, okay, I get that it's heated situation and you've all got different opinions, but they're just complete goofs. It makes no sense.
Interestingly, when Steven Spielberg read this book, when he was thinking about turning it into a movie, he was like, I don't know if I can turn this into a movie because there's no likable characters in the entire book.
Oh, yeah. Really?
And that's why they like, Brody is like a massive change from the source material. They try to make him way more relatable and nice. Like they even cut out a bit where Hooper bangs Brody's wife. Yeah.
Holy shitballs.
Yeah, like there was no likable characters in this fucking book.
Ah, that makes sense though, because I was telling a colleague that I was going to be watching this movie and doing a podcast on it. He's like, well, you know it's all about sex. I'm like, I thought it was about a shark terrorizing a beach. He's like, oh, well, actually the movie probably is. But apparently the book is just, it's basically an allegory about sex. So, you know, there stands to reason there'd be some sex in it.
I don't know.
There's like he sent me an article about it. Oh, I knew something about a film that Sam didn't.
Well done.
But that is interesting that you raised that, because in the opening scene we have got, Mrs. What's her name? She's in bed. Like
Mrs. Brody.
Yeah, it looks like they're kind of, it doesn't look like a husband and wife situation. It looks like they're getting out of bed from like, you know, they're having an affair.
Yeah, because they had
something.
Like the whole party beforehand where everyone was having like this saucy 70s swinger time.
Yeah, exactly. It just had that vibe.
Yeah, I got the same vibe.
It.
I wasn't sure if they were like what the situation was with them until later on.
I didn't realise until later on when one of the kids called him dad. I was like, oh, it's husband and wife.
Quite interestingly, the author was actually on the set for most of the filming and most of all the other stuff. He got kicked off because him and Steven Spielberg used to have massive fights with each other. In fact, Richard Dreyfuss and Robert Shaw had massive scraps with each other. Like, everyone hated each other while making this film.
Well, you can totally see that. It's come out. Yeah. And that's my bad thing.
Well, maybe like the author was trying to still keep that sexiness into it. Like, just through that first scene. And then
he
was the only one that made it in.
With all that feathered 70s hair, how could anyone, you know? and those pure amazing sex. Glasses that Brody wears.
Whew. Yeah. Mm. So that brings me to my final good thing is I think we get a good amount of shark scenes and a good amount of jump scares. Nothing that pisses me off in a movie like this more than having too much mystery about the thing that's causing all the terror.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Like Bird Box or something where you're like, well, but what is it?
Yeah. Exactly. So we see the shark, not too much, but just enough. I liked it.
Yeah, cool. I'm with you there as well because it has one of the most infamous jump scares of all time, which is him chumming into the ocean and then the shark coming up. And there's a couple of other like really good ones, like where the dude's head comes out from underneath the boat or comes through the hole in the side of the boat.
Fuck, that got me.
Yeah, that got me as well.
Yeah. What's your score?
I'm going to go 7,333.
Okay, I'll rip up the divorce papers. What about you, Liz? What do you got?
All right. I'm going to start with the fact that I think the way they built suspense was really done brilliantly throughout the movie. Yeah, just the music, the cinematography, I guess, just everything. I thought, it was really well done. and sort of you had this feeling of dread and anxiety, and I thought it was brilliant. The bad thing for me was that the music that they played when they were fighting the shark didn't really fit. Like, it was supposed to be this scary, terrifying, like, oh my God, there's a shark and it might literally eat you whole. And then the music was like a jaunty sea shanty. And yeah, I was like,
I noticed that too.
And I was just like, no, that does. And I know the guy, is it Williams?
John Williams, yeah, that did the score for Indiana Jones, did Star Wars.
And look, don't get me wrong, the that was fucking amazing. Like I said, that really built the suspense, but I just did not like the music that they played in those.
It was like they were celebrating a little bit too early. It's like, hey, you haven't caught them yet. You're not on the way back home.
Yeah, exactly. It was like they were like, oh, look at us. We're going to beat the shark. And you're like, yes, but are you? Because you're not doing it yet. Exactly, 100%. Super weird. But my final good thing, don't worry, Sam, is that I really liked how well the movie held up. Like, it's like, what, 30... 40? I can't do math.
75. Came out in 46
years ago. Yeah, so 35 years later.
Yeah.
So, no, wait, 45.
46.
Because I'm...
46. It's 2021, Liz.
I can't keep track, mate. Like, honestly, I barely know what
Liz is still living in 1999.
Yeah. Party like it's 1999. Yeah. Yeah, no. So, yeah, 46 years later, and it was a really good film. And I get that they had, you know, not all the fun technologies we have around effects and stuff, but generally speaking, that was pretty good. The plot was good. You know, a little bit of misogyny, but not excessively so, not too horrifying. And yeah, generally speaking, I liked it. So I'm going to give it a 7,979 barrels.
Wow.
I think that score on, was it Rotten Tomatoes? No, the other one.
IMDb. IMDb had 8 out of 10. Maybe I do need to write up those divorce papers again and move on.
What? To me, you are dreaming. Excuse me, I need to go and vomit. Blech. All right, Sam, your turn.
How much have I drank?
Miracle.
Fuck. Yeah, I mean, look, I'll just cut to the chase. Yes, it's a hyperbole sandwich. Whatever good things you guys said, those are my two good things. But then my great thing is that it just has so many payoffs and like foreshadowing and, okay, I'll boil it down. It's like the technical production of this film is just outstanding, right? So they talk about exploding canisters at one point in the film. Sure enough, that's how the film ends. We get an exploding canister. We get a shot where Brody half runs into the ocean when everyone's getting like, shark, 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 and they all come running in. And we know Brody's afraid of water. If you watch the scene again, he goes running in there instinctively, and then he looks down, notices he's in water, shits his pants, and backs out of the water. He's like, oh my God, he like tries to get out of the water. The boat is called the Orca. What's the only natural predator of a great white shark? An orca, a killer whale.
I didn't know that. That's cool. Mm.
And then my final one is that we have this incredibly poignant scene where they're talking about the Indianapolis, and Quint says, I'm never going to wear a life jacket again. And sure enough, when it looks like shit's going sideways, he goes in, stares at the life jackets, grabs one for Brody and one for Hooper, comes out, throws them to him, and then just walks off. It's like a man of his convictions. So, yeah, I mean, hyperbole sandwich, I was trying to think of a right score for this because it's $10,000 that Quint asks for. And so I was like, okay, maybe that. But then I'm like, that's not really hyperbole. You need to go big. So I'm going to go the $3,000 that Brody originally offered him plus the $10,000. So 13,000 out of 10,000. That's my score. Hyperbole sandwich. Easily in my top 20 films of all time. Sometimes top 10, depending on how I'm feeling.
Well done.
Fair enough.
I feel
well explained.
Relieved. Just got it all out.
You've got your
opinion. Wanted to say
out.
This.
Been trying to
for 150 plus episodes. Sam's just been wanting to say this.
I'll finally get to talk about one of my top 20 films. I don't think I've done it a couple of times. But
hey, Sam, you know you're in charge of this podcast. You can watch your top 20 films anytime.
What we've discovered is that when somebody comes on here, Infraverbal Diorama, starts talking about their favorite films, Nick Haskins, we get Liz, this bitch, start talking about how shit it was. So I was like, I don't want to do these films because I don't want Liz going, this is fucking garbage. Why'd you make me watch this shit?
That does not always happen. Colby Mack will support me on this with
That's
Coming
true.
To America.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
I only shit on films that are shit. So if your favourite films aren't shit, it's not a problem.
You didn't shit on The Room, so that's not a good point.
I did, but only to the point that you would expect.
Yeah, exactly. A reasonable amount. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough waxing poetical from me. Let's move it over to question number two, which is a Patreon question. It comes courtesy of our man Dan Brennick of the Netflix and Swill podcast. I talk about these guys all the time. They're absolutely awesome. Just go check out the Netflix and Swill podcast. Covers all things Netflix related. Anyway, what's his question, Stace?
What character was the true MVP of the movie?
I want to say the mother of the kid that died.
Same.
Ooh. Yeah. Like if she hadn't gone and put her posters up, and I'm not saying she did it in like the most like appropriate way, but fuck it, you know, like if she hadn't done that, then who knows who else would have been chewed up before all the fishermen got out to, you know, try and take down the shark.
The scene where she walks out into the water and you discover that she's the one that's missing a kid is so fucking harrowing. You know, when she's like looking around and trying to find her son and she's like,
she's like disbelieving that it would be, because you just wouldn't think, like, out of all the people there, that it'd be your kid.
Yeah, exactly. The chances are, like, well, 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000? Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd just be like, oh, he must be somewhere around here. And they'd be like, but he's not turning up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, same for me. What about you, Sos?
I'm going to go with the real obvious one. It's the shark.
What?
Without the shark, there would be no movie.
I was like, so the Stacey answer.
In terms of value.
Stacey answers in already.
In terms of value, he's right up there.
I would argue that the shark is a lead of the film, though.
But how many lines does the shark have? Isn't that how you decide who's going up for the Best Actor Oscar?
Is it?
I think so. When they're going between best and supporting, they go on based on amount
screen
of dialogue
time
or
and the amount of lines and stuff. And
yeah, like, I was going to say you couldn't just do amount of lines, because what about like A Quiet Place where nobody says anything?
Mm. Yeah, admittedly, he doesn't have that much screen time either, and he's played by three different sharks. There's one that had the left hand side cut out of him, the right hand side cut out of him, and the bottom cut out of him, and each cost $250,000, and they were nicknamed Bruce after Steven Spielberg's lawyer.
There you go.
Wow, that's loving the trivia, Sam. Keep it up.
I remember seeing a making of, or at least a little bit of a making of or something, and just seeing it like mounted and how they were like making it happen. And I thought it was really interesting, actually, like that they couldn't, because, you know, these days they're just CGI it and whatever. But yeah,
which
back then they had to be really creative.
Which would make it worse, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Apparently, absolutely.
There are only
nightmare.
A couple bits where I was just like, that's obviously not a real shark. You know, it was just like vaguely flapping its mouth like, and you're like, yeah okay. No. But on the whole, it was pretty good.
Could
actually
be zombie shark.
I found it quite realistic.
You found it quite realistic.
Well, and, with all your experience of great white sharks.
Yeah.
Okay, so question three. What was the biggest dick move of the movie? And try not to say the mayor, because he's the obvious dick.
Yeah, he's way too obvious. Pretty much everything he does, eh? So I'm going to go with this one dude who's like an extra or whatever, but he's like a quite rotund man. And when the shark, well, the fake shark shows up, he starts like, everyone's trying to like hightail it out of the water. And there's these two kids on a Lilo paddling, and he smokes these kids off the Lilo.
Oh, yeah.
And then picks up the Lilo himself, jumps on it, starts paddling. It's like, woman and children first? Nah, fuck that.
Yeah, that's a massive dick move.
Yeah, I laughed at that bit.
But you've spoiled mine, because I think it was the kids who had the fake shark fin.
Yeah.
That is a massive dick move. Come on, kids. That's not funny.
Good point. I do not get how anybody thinks that's funny. Like, what little wankers?
And in the movie, it got brushed under the carpet. They just pulled the kids out and said, oh, like, well, carry on.
He made me
But
do
how much
it.
Would they?
He made me...
How much would they have shit themselves, like, popping out of the water and fighting, like, six guns trained on them? You'd just be like,
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. I'm going with the coroner, because him lying about the cause of death of
person,
that like that. That's unbelievable. Like, he should have been struck off. You can't lie about a cause of death when you're the coroner. That's fucking disgusting.
I think the entire purpose of that role in the movie was to just highlight the corruption and the relationship, the influence that the mayor had over people.
Oh, absolutely. But, like, with the mayor, you're kind of like, yeah, all right, so your whole purpose is just trying to get in money and stuff.
Mm.
So, actually, I felt like the coroner was a bigger dick than the mayor, because the coroner should have just been like, no, I'm not going to lie about what killed this person. That's literally my job. So,
totally.
Too many people need to stand up to the mayor, eh? Like that old couple that he was like, hey, why aren't you in the water? And he's like, oh, just put on my sun.
Oh, my God. I was like, why don't you put your own fucking togs on, you douche? Like, and he had kids there. Why aren't you getting your own kids out there? Oh.
Yeah, motherfucker.
Like, oh, I just... Just the epitome of that, like the patriarchy. It's the epitome of the fucking patriarchy.
Uh-oh. So only question
And if you thought
three.
I wasn't going to bring up the patriarchy, you were wrong.
You brought up misogyny and now patriarchy, so if you're playing the Liz Bingo at home, there's two from two.
Yes. All right.
Next question, also a Patreon question, comes courtesy of our man Nerdtrovert. Fuck you, the man, bro. Love this question, actually. I think it's pretty awesome because you get to be a little bit more insightful as to how you appreciate a film. So his question, what part of the movie was the perfect time for a bathroom break?
I think it was any of the 500 scenes where Brody was hassling the mayor about closing the beach or vice versa. It's like, okay, yes, we get it. We know the dynamic. And it just kept going on and on for like the first hour of the movie, it felt like. So lots of bathroom break opportunities there.
The funniest one was when Hooper was like, I'm not going to hang around here and let this man be served up as a hot lunch or whatever he says. Then he like walks off and then Brody's like, hey, come back here. He's like, okay. And then he just walks back. Just like,
that line cracked me up because I was like, but he won't be a hot lunch because he's in the ocean. And
yeah,
like,
he'll be cold.
I don't understand. Like, that's, yeah.
Sashimi.
Mine was, like, some of the shark fighting I found got a bit monotonous. I was just kind of like, okay, they're shooting him with another barrel. Okay, he's going to wheel around a bit. And I didn't really understand all the technicalities of what they were trying to do. And actually quite some of the language was a bit weird. And so I get that there were technical terms for the boat and things, but there were even just turns of phrase and the ways that Quint would say things. And I was like, I think he's saying that, you know, they're going to fight the shark, but I wasn't really sure. So some of that I was kind of like, yeah, all right, so they're fighting the shark, whatever.
Yeah, he refers to the great white shark as a porker like three times. I'm like, what the fuck is a porker? It's a pig, isn't it? What the fuck is he on about?
Yeah. Oh, another one was the summer ginks. What the hell is a gink?
I don't think you should look that up.
It
I'm pretty sure
racist,
you're going to find something horribly offensive on Urban Dictionary.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, so like the language made that a bit tricky for me. But yeah, that's what I'm going with.
What about you, Sam?
The one for me, it was a little bit gross, but at the same time, it didn't really add much to the story, is when they were gutting the fish. Sort of around that time where they pulled up that shark and they're like, oh, you know, we don't want the kitten boy to get, you know, empty out onto the wharf and all that other shit. There's about 5 to 10 minutes there where it's like not really much happens, where not much really happens. And you know, like, it's not the fucking right shark. It's not going to be like, oh, hey, it was. Okay, see ya. Nice to meet you.
See you in the movie.
Hey, can I bang your wife? No, sorry, the scene's been cut out of the movie. So he's just saying goodbye? Yeah, bye. Okay, see ya, I'm off to Brisbane.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you think they just looked at a map and went, oh, we need to pick somewhere in Australia. Oh, Brisbane.
Yeah, that'll Brisbane.
And we won't find out how to say it.
Not Brisbane, like, Brisbane.
We'll just say Brisbane.
You don't need me in Brisbane.
So weird.
Okay, question number 5. What is it there, Stace?
It is, what quote from this film would be the worst to hear after having sex?
Don't touch any of the equipment.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Like, whatever the equipment are that they're talking about, I'm kind of hurt that they don't want me to touch it.
You just got to stop having sex in medical offices, Liz. It's just...
Okay.
Done.
I will add that to the agenda. What about you, Sam?
I've got two. And I'm going to do both. One of them is Brody saying, we've got more people down here than we can handle. Like,
that sounds fun.
Yeah, probably. Actually, that would be quite enjoyable. The other one is Brody saying, come on down here and chum some of this shit.
It's just purely disgusting.
Gross. Yes. Straight up gross. Ugh.
That's why it's the worst.
Stace?
He's just swimming with bow-legged women. That's quite
yes.
offensive.
Yeah, what does that even mean? Why would you want to swim with bow-legged women? Like, is it because they're... legs are open, but then like their feet are in the way, and also what swimming.
No, it's like they're bow-legged, so you can just swim up behind them. And
I just don't get what that means.
Again, this is another thing you probably shouldn't Google. Is we should probably just move on to the next question. Anyway, that moves us over to question number 6, which comes courtesy of the amazing woman that is Emily Higgins of the Tasteless podcast. You guys know Emily; she's been on heaps. Tasteless basically takes a universally beloved film and compares it to one that she thinks is way better than that. And it's usually a film that absolutely sucks. I know she's done Jaws, and I can't remember what she compared it to. Oh, it's Bombshell, the film about those fox ladies suing Roger Ailes, yeah.
What? She compared Jaws to Bombshell?
Yeah, look, yes, I don't understand it either, okay? So
it was about the villain being shrouded where decency must triumph over convenience. I think that's probably a little tenuous, Emily, but we love you, so we'll let it go.
Yeah.
Anyway, your question is... what film would you pair with this as a double feature?
Now, usually she wants something sort of obscure and underrated. This isn't that obscure, and it's kind of underrated. Either you love it or you don't. I'm going to go with Deep Blue Sea. It plays homage to the original Jaws, And it's preposterously fucking stupid. And after Jaws, which is a bit more serious and kind of jaunty, you kind of want something that's like the opposite of serious and jaunty. I know those two words don't go well together, but you kind of want something that's just like just batshit insane, but at the same time, like fucking genuinely terrifying. So, yeah.
Seems fair.
I'm going with a similar theme of batshit insane and kind of terrifying. And that's a movie we watched this year for one of our Patreons. And that movie is Cocoon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's this got very similar themes, except for...
What the fuck? No, it doesn't.
Themes. She's allowed to think it does. It's like things under the water that are scary.
Yeah.
And unknown.
I've never seen it, but yeah. Oh, wait, maybe I have seen it recently.
Is it about
old dudes in a swimming pool?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Old dudes in a swimming pool, and they found a magic rock that makes them young again.
I watched it on the TV or something, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Exactly, what is that?
It's weird.
It is batshit. Yeah.
It's by Ron Howard, which I would feel is like a lesser version of Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy too.
Yeah.
I'm going with Pacific Rim because I feel like it's the juxtaposition of modern life on a similar problem, like terrifying things coming out of the ocean. And, like, how you solve them. But, like, in Pacific Rim, like, there's such modern technology with the, what do they call them? The big...
Jaegers.
Jaegers, yeah. Like, the Jaegers, like, this big, you know, it's such a technological solution as opposed to, like, these three men on a boat.
I feel like you've won back M from Verbal Diorama since she loves Pacific Rim.
I know. I thought that would be helpful. See, M, I actually kind of like Pacific Rim, I'm pretty sure. So
a single tear is rolling down her cheek right now. I was thinking, oh, Liz does love me again.
It's not pure hatred. All right.
Cool. Moves me over to question number 7. What deep philosophical debate arose in you guys while you were watching this film?
Well, for me, I was wondering, why are there so many people at the beach when you can't go swimming? Like, you know, right at the start of the film where the beach is packed and then the mayor points out that no one's swimming. Why are you there to start with? People?
Because it's not like it's going to be, you're not getting your nice cooling down from being in the water.
Yeah.
In fact, it's probably just going to be hotter.
Exactly.
Because there's no shade.
Yeah, you'd rather go sit in the park under a tree and get on the piss or something, right?
Instead of getting all hot and sweaty and sandy.
Yeah, don't get me started on sand. I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and it gets everywhere.
See, I live at the beach, Sam.
Well, not physically, but yes, I do live quite close to the beach. Do you know how many times I went to the beach last year?
Oh, it's disgusting.
Probably count it on one hand.
That's
so terrible. What about your poor daughter?
I take her, Liz. Don't worry.
Oh, okay, good.
I take her to the park. Liz takes it. Oh, Liz. Fuck. I've already swapped Stacey already.
I'm gone.
You do not want me as a mother of your child. I'm very
no,
child
no, friend. I don't. I take her to the park. Stacey takes her to the beach. That's the deal.
Mm. All right. Okay, well, I'm going slightly more philosophical, and it's how people just love to ignore inconvenient truths and, like, What really stood out to me in this movie, it really made me think of COVID-19.
Yeah.
Like, there's this really obvious thing staring you in the face, but it's inconvenient, so we're just going to ignore it and pretend like it's not there. Well, cool. Yeah. Let me know how that works out for you, because I'm pretty sure it's going to work out shit. Like, I just, it was really interesting. The whole start of it, I was just like, oh my God, like, we needed to show this at the start of the pandemic and be like, now think about it. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's funny because there's so many horror films where it's like the scientist pops up, like in this film, and says, hey, you've got this problem and holy fuck, it's a huge problem and you guys should just, like, best thing to do, don't go out into the ocean until this thing fucks off. And they're just like, nah, not gonna listen to that.
Cool story, but, oh, and like, because the mayor was like, hey, this is literally our lives we're talking about. I'm like, no, it isn't. It's money.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not your literal lives. He is trying to save your literal life by not being eaten by a shark. Like, it just blew me away. So is that your philosophical debate, Sam? How I just about called you Steve.
Jesus, Lisa, pull your fucking head in.
Is that your literal philosophical debate, Sam, that people just don't listen to scientists?
No. I mean, that's obvious. We already know that. But the one that I had is, like, right at the start of the film, we see a guy and a girl. And they run down to the beach and they obviously probably drunk. It's like 5 a.m. or something like that. Very early morning. He's so blind drunk that he blacks out on the beach and she goes out into the water, swims around, gets munched, dies. My debate is, like, what happened to that dude? Like, did he, like, wake up on the beach like, oh, fuck, pretty sure I had a girl last night. Wonder where she went. oh, well, better go home. What's the worst? She must have just cruised. You know what I mean? Like,
you see him talking to the cops. Station. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, could you imagine being that dude and waking up and then finding out that the girl that you, like, you'd be so, like, you'd have like a gamut of emotions, but one of them would be, oh my God, I'm so glad I drank so much last night. I got so fucking drunk, I stopped myself getting in my shark.
And that'd be followed up by like survivor's guilt and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That scene raised two questions for me. Number one, did she really think about the practicality of her, like, dropping all her clothes all the way along the fence line while she was running down the beach? Imagine what a pain in the ass that would be to go back and slowly put all your clothes back on.
Yeah, you'd never find them again.
Have you made any smart decisions at 5 a.m. when you're drunk, Liz?
Anyway, without answering that, my other question there is, how come there was no blood? Because, like, when the little boy got eaten, like, the blood was literally, like, lapping at the shore, whereas when she got eaten, there was no blood.
It was quite dark. I don't think we would have seen it,
I guess so, but no, all the water looked the same, and I literally wrote down, where the hell is all the blood?
Maybe
the shark ate her in one bite. There was no blood.
Yeah. Oh, yes, perhaps. Yeah.
Sort of toyed with her a little bit, dragged her around a bit, and then just
gulped. That was quite hilarious, actually. I think it was supposed to be scary, but I laughed. I was like, look at her flying around.
Ha ha, dumb drunk woman die. Ha ha.
Yeah.
Cool. Question 8, also a Patreon question, comes courtesy of our mate Nick Haskins of Nikolai's Kitchen, a cooking podcast that is just overflowing with joy. I absolutely love it. It's great. Stacey's going to be on it soon. I keep pushing for this. One day she's going to be.
Keep saying that.
Keep saying soon.
Yeah, in 2025 or something.
Yeah. Anyway, what's his question, Stace?
Nick would like to know, what type of meal is this movie?
I'm getting in first because I bet that everyone else has the same answer. If you don't, you're stupid. It's fish and chips on the beach.
That is a good answer.
Close.
I think we're going to have a very seafood-orientated theme
here. Of course it's seafood. It's smoked fish because the fish gets absolutely smoked in this film.
Nice. All right.
Mine is fillet of flounder. Because those guys are just floundering around in that boat trying to kill the shark.
You guys are so literal.
Yeah.
So literal.
Jesus, Stacey. There we go.
That's excellent. All right, question 9. What scene was sorely missing from this film?
I really wanted to see the mother confront the mayor, because here's another dick move, is that the mother comes up and confronts Brody and says, you know, you knew and you didn't do anything. It's like, he fucking tried. The mayor's just standing there like, oh, yeah. It's your fucking fault, mayor. Why aren't you going to her and going, well, actually, lady, I told Brody to shut the fuck up. I was the one that opened up the beach. You know, I'm the one that should be getting slapped. He doesn't. I wanted to see that mother confront the mayor. That's all I wanted.
But then afterwards he goes to Brody. He's like, she's wrong. He knows. It's not that he didn't know. He did. But he was too much of a pussy to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. To face up to it. Well, my scene involves the mayor or someone or anyone, actually, at the end of the film. Those guys just kind of float up to the shore and there's no one there to greet them. They're not running up to the mayor saying, hey, we killed him. Nobody knows what happened out there on that boat. Nobody knows whether...
fanfare.
There should have been fanfare or just nobody is unresolved. Jaws could still be out there circling and swimming around.
Well, I've got a story for you, Stacey. Not only is there a sequel to this film, but there's three sequels. Jaws 1 through 4.
That seems excessive. Oh,
and if you think they get worse by the film, yes.
Yes.
That would be standard practice for sequels.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have had a parade. Speaking of which, did you guys just think that the moment right at the start with the parade and the guys are literally standing in front of the kids that are walking through, it was just ridiculous? It was like, guys, there's a parade. Why are you standing in the middle of the street?
Yeah.
Sorry, you just made me think of that. I was like, that was so dumb. Yeah. I'm disappointed that neither of you said mine, which is that obviously the mayor needed to be eaten by the shark.
Yes.
The whole time. I was just going, can't wait till this guy gets eaten. But no.
No. And our final question is also a Patreon question. Comes courtesy of the amazing man that is Chris Yenny. Fuck you, the man, Chris. Chris would like to know, what song would we have inserted into this film and where? And as per norm, we usually try to go as on the nose as possible. Anyway, what's your answer, Stace?
Okay, I'm going for a classic Kiwi anthem. 6 months in a leaky boat.
Oh, I love it. When?
When Jaws first attacks the rickety old wooden boat and starts cracking through the hull.
Oh, when you see all the things all like pulling apart and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny you say that because you were talking about how some of the score is kind of sea shanty-ish, and that song is as well.
Yeah.
It's got a bit of a sea shanty, yeah. Well done, Stace. That was probably the most on-the-nose answer ever. What about you, Liz? What do you got?
The scene where, quite early on in the film, when Brody is sitting on the beach and watching, dreading, thinking that the shark's going to turn up any moment, but everyone else is super chill and having a good time and, you know, swimming and laughing and stuff. I'm going with Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys. Because I think that they actually were playing some classical music, which I thought was really weird. And I feel like Beach Boys, you know, that feels like it's the right sort of time genre as well.
Yeah, way more
fun. So it's absolutely, could have been playing on a radio, and that's exactly like the kind of vibe that they were giving off, right? So
yeah.
I would have gone with Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven right at the end when Brody is positioned at the end of the boat. It kind of looks like he's on a stairway to his end.
Yeah, he does.
Best way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been my one.
That would have been terrifying, that moment. Mm.
Smile, you son of a bitch.
That was awesome.
There's a quote to hear after sex.
Yeah, that'd be right. Stacey wouldn't like it. Don't try.
Stacey's cringing.
Yeah.
Hey, talking about Stacey, it's on to your questions, your personal questions. What do you got there, babe?
Oh, well, yeah. I'm super excited to ask you guys these questions. First one is, how the hell did the boat manage to last so long after it started getting eaten by the shark?
I'm going with the fact that old school building and, like, you know, manufacturing and stuff is just so much better than modern stuff. Like, modern stuff all falls apart in like 3 minutes these days, but everything they built back in the day actually lasted. So I figure everything was just built really well. That's my answer.
Yeah.
As I believe I mentioned earlier, Robert Shaw and Dreyfuss hated each other, and that was mostly on account of Robert Shaw's rampant alcoholism, which I think he carried through quite well into Quint. And so I think the boat's got rampant alcoholism, as in, like, it's had so much alcohol spilled all over it that it's just sticking together like a giant mess of fucking alcohol.
So it's preserved.
It's been preserved perfectly. And it's almost like petrified. I don't know the best way to describe it. It's like almost become
pickled.
Pickled.
It's pickled.
It's become pickled perfectly. There we go.
They do say God looks after babies and drunks.
Exactly.
Mm, God. Mm-hmm. Okay, my next question is, what Scar story would you swap with Hooper and Quint?
Okay, so mine are all pretty shit. I have a whole bunch of scars, but they're all boring. But I know of a scar story that a friend of mine used to tell, which I thought was hilarious. So he was South African, and we were in London, and he had this huge scar on the top of his head, like quite a large, be like I don't know, 10 centimetres long or something, like quite a gnarly one. And he was a guy that shaved his head, so you could see it pretty well. And if any girls asked him what the scar was from, he said, oh, well, you know, I was in an orphanage and a lion came up and tried to take one of the kids. So I fought off the lion and the lion, like, bit me on the head, but I managed to, like, beat it away. And but I've lived to, you know, tell the tale or whatever.
That's
and,
amazing.
Like, the chicks would just be like, oh, my God, really? He's like, yeah, it was really scary or whatever. And one day I was just like, obviously that isn't true. What's the real story? He's like, oh, I had a surgery. It was pretty boring. Like, I was just like... Smooth. Good on you.
That is so amazing.
Quality. Good old John. South African John.
My one is just being on my stag do and getting smashed out of my luging cart while going down the side of a hill in Queenstown and basically taking all the skin off my leg. And because it was my stag do, or Buck's Knot, or whatever you guys want to call it, I didn't go to the hospital. So it got infected. So I ended up having to have almost needed emergency surgery, and I was off my feet for 3 weeks, lying on my back screaming in miserable pain.
Wow, that's delightful.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I've just done the same thing for the last week for broken toe. So there we go.
Hopefully the
scars. What do you say? Do you have anything interesting?
Nah, I'm same as you. I don't have boring scars. Okay, my final question is, when they were all sitting around having a bloody heart-to-heart while they were having dinner, the story of the Indianapolis, of the what SS Indianapolis.
USS.
USS.
Oh, US, sorry, yeah. USS Indianapolis came up. Was it really required in this film? It seemed very dramatic.
When we were watching it, listeners, she turned to me halfway through and said, oh, hurry up. But I was like, this is one of the most classic scenes of film history.
I could see what they were trying to do with the, you know, like, they're obviously trying to explain Quint's motivations, because he was obviously obsessed with sharks, and I thought it was a nice way to sort of bring that back to, you know, really explain why he had spent his life ongoing trying to take ownership and take control and beat them and have the power over them. Because before that, you were kind of like, well, why is this guy so obsessed with sharks? And so they kind of explained it. It was pretty fucking depressing, though, and it did. It was long, like it was a long explanation, and but I mean, I'd never heard of it, which is amazing. So I went and had a good read about it afterwards, and it was a pretty fucking harrowing story.
Yeah, I think this is necessary. It gives Quint such a dimension that you actually are upset when he dies, because up until this point, he's been such an insufferable dickhead that you're like, wow, this kind of explains a lot. The only thing I will say, though, is I feel like it came at the wrong time. Like, I feel like we get that scene where they're, like, trying to fight the shark and they harpoon it and they put a barrel into it. Like, it would have been better if it had just been before then, and then, like, the last 25 minutes had just been nothing but action-packed fighting the shark and then succeeding, as opposed to having this, like, almost like an intermission halfway through or where they introduce the scene. But, like, who the fuck am I to even try and fucking tell Steven Spielberg or the editors that worked on this film to do a better job? And what the fuck? Like, am I serious right now?
Well, because I think actually the point of it having it there was that they wanted to have that first scene where they weren't getting along and they were arguing and, like, you know, really not happy. And then that was, like, building rapport so that in the next scenes so that they'd cope better. Like, I could see what they needed to do. But, yeah, I can definitely see how it was a bit much.
Makes sense.
Yeah. All right, so my first question, number 14. In that scene where Quint and Hooper are sharing their scar stories, Brody takes a moment to, like, pull up his shirt and look at a scar on his stomach, but then he doesn't say anything about it. And I wondered if you guys had theories on what his scar story was for that.
What have you got, Stacey? Because I've got the nerdy answer.
I think it was a dog bite. I think early in his career, he was, like, on the beat in the neighborhood, like, I don't know, you know, like what cops do. And just a grumpy dog got him.
Oh, poor bugger.
So the actual answer is that Roy Scheider had his appendix removed. So he kind of pulled up his shirt to show his appendix scar and then sort of thought, you know, like, why the fuck would these guys care? They've fought sharks and I've had my appendix removed. Like, how's that comparable? But, like, I want to go back to the horny side of it. I reckon his wife got a little bit too frisky with her nails and, like, that was the end result.
I forget it was something to do with drowning, see, because he had to have a reason for being scared of the water. And, like, you know, he early on says he nearly drowned as a kid, so I figured that it was tied into that somehow. Yeah. But now you've ruined it
that
for me, Sam.
That would have been smarter.
Yeah.
Good.
All right, question 15. Why did Quint stop Brody from calling the Coast Guard?
Good old male ego. This motherfucker wants to kill this shark. It is the biggest shark he's ever seen. He wants to have his name inscribed on the side of that shark when he takes it into his taxidermist who has a heart attack. He doesn't want any other dudes showing up, helping in any way, shape, or form. He knows these two are useless at hunting the shark. He wants to be the man. He wants that glory, that fame.
How did that work out for him?
Really well.
Yes. Well, mine's on a similar theme, but I just think Quint, he's just rogue. He just doesn't want to follow any rules and he doesn't want to be inside the law. He doesn't want to have any constraints, just wants to do his own thing.
Doesn't want to be inside the law, wants to be inside the shark.
As it turns out.
That's how it worked out for him. I think that's really true, and that's the kind of vibe that they tried to put across really early on when he was like, $10,000, just me by myself. And then the policeman was like, so it'll be me and you and this other guy. And he was like, yeah, okay. Like, kind of like, I thought that was really weird because I felt like they really flipped who he was halfway through. And I mentioned this to Sam previously, like, to start with, he seems like this really taciturn. Is that the word I want? Taciturn?
Yeah, sure.
A really stoic, quiet kind of guy who didn't really say anything, was just kind of like, me, man, kill shark kind of thing. And then suddenly he turns out to be this guy who just would not shut the fuck up. Waffling and singing and talking absolute bollocks. And I was just like, what? Like, it was real weird.
But in his own environment, on the ship, out in the middle of nowhere.
Where, like, he's comfortable.
Where he's comfortable. That's his natural environment. Take him onto shore, into the town meeting on land with all the landlubbers. And he just clams up.
He's the ultimate gatekeeper, really cool. Like, he's the ultimate, like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. Oh, you don't know shit. Oh, yeah, rah, rah, rah.
Anyway, in addition to Quint being annoying, there was another character that kind of annoyed me, and I'm asking about that now in question 16. Did Mrs. Brody ever pay any attention to her children, particularly the small one who was, like, 2 years old or something?
Jesus Christ, Liz, it's 4th of July weekend, man. It's fucking, she's on holiday. It's 1 o'clock, baby, yeah!
Like, the kids are, like, literally sitting on the beach, just playing in the sand. I don't think she even knows where he is, and he's, like, 2 years old.
I think she's so much of an alcoholic that she's forgotten that she has another child.
It really confused me for a while, actually, because I didn't realise there were two kids, but, like, right away. Because, actually, when the kid is sitting in the boat, she's like, the Brody's like, I want him to learn the laws of the sea or whatever it is, you know, the regulations. He's like 2 years old. He can't read. Like, it wasn't until later I realised there were two children. What about you, Stace? How'd you think of Mrs. Brody?
Well, I think that you're right. No, she didn't really pay any attention to her kids. And maybe that's how mothering should be. You spend so much time running around after every requirement for those little munchkins that, yeah, seriously, maybe you do need to give them a longer leash.
The funniest part about this, listeners, is that she's talking about ignoring kids while our baby monitor's going off and we've just noticed that our daughter's woken up and she's pointed at it and shrugged her shoulders and gone, oh, well.
She's all right.
Legit call.
She's okay.
She's fine. She's not going to be disappearing anywhere.
Exactly.
As someone who's proudly child-free, I get right behind that, that argument, Stacey.
She's just sitting there playing with
She'll be fine.
Something.
I need to go up there and give her some naval code so that she knows the laws of the ocean before she gets up out of bed.
I'll give her something to study. There you go.
Yep. She's right, two. She needs to learn now. Cool, yeah, on to me. So I've got a couple of questions, sort of more talking about the last half of the film. If you guys have been on the Orca, out hunting the shark, at what point would you guys have absolutely shunted your pants?
Yeah, it will be the one where I actually messaged Sam just going, oh my God, I just about had a fucking heart attack. And it was when, the one you've already mentioned before, when Brody's putting the chum in the water and then suddenly the shark is literally right there, like a meter away, and you're just like, holy shit! Like, yeah, that was epic.
Yeah,
that was a brilliant moment.
Well, my moment would have been a lot earlier. I wouldn't have even got on that boat. I mean, did you see the Orca, the state of it?
Yep. They really did need a bigger boat. There's no question.
Yeah, and it was like just like all strapped up and roped up. You know, like nothing was clean. It was all just held together by a piece of string.
Stacey would have spent 2 weeks repairing that boat and making it nice in order for her to go on it before. Ignoring the fact.
Some nice doilies, some throws.
I want a nice boat. Shame about the shark.
Yeah. You might have rinsed off all the booze, though, and then it wouldn't have stuck together as well.
Exactly.
I would have ruined it.
God, that thing would have stank. And staying on the theme of being on the boat, I want to know from you guys, if you guys are out there with the three dudes, which one would you guys have chucked in the shark cage? I'm not saying that you want to kill him, by the way. I'm just saying, like, what's, you know, but if that happens, it happens.
I would have put Brody in there. He needed a job. He needed a job to do. Like, you've got the scientist and the burly old fisherman, and you've got the cop who doesn't like water, and why is he even there? Didn't he hire Quint to go kill the shark? Why does he need to be on the boat? So give him a job.
So you're thinking sacrificial lamb, right, aren't you?
No, not to be killed, as you said.
I want to put Quint and Hooper in together because they should work out their bloody male posturing crap. Like,
I agree.
All of that was so unnecessary. Like, it just, oh my God, what a pissing contest. It just was ridiculous. I mean, if I had to choose one, I'd go Quint because he was probably slightly worse on the male posturing, but throw them both in there, let them have their fisticuffs and get over it.
Fair enough. And my final question, based purely on this film, do you guys think that the mayor got re-elected?
Yes, because white men fail upward.
And as I mentioned earlier, nobody knows what happened out on the water that day. So, and nobody would have known that, you know, the ins and outs of the mayor deciding not to close the beach.
And remember, he signed the order to get Quint to go out and kill the shark. So he would have been like, I took the steps necessary. Look at my signature on this paper. Yep, yes. So,
exactly. He was the hero that saved the day. Anywho, that takes us down to the end. And unfortunately, Stacey's now had to leave us to go take care of our daughter, so that just leaves me with Liz. Stacey doesn't have an answer to the last question in anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Anywho, the question that we threw out there to you guys, our dear listeners, is what's a movie that you guys watched at way too young of an age? On a previous episode, I mentioned that I watched Jaws when I was about 6 or 7. I think my grandma got it out for me. She picked up E.T. and read on the back from the director of Jaws, Steven Spielberg. Thought, he'll like this. Came back 2 hours later to find me crying behind a couch. And I didn't go in the ocean for years. Absolutely traumatic. So I watched it way too young of an age. What about you, Liz? What's something you watched when you were way too young?
It's legit. So I actually got kept away from any terrifying films, thank God. Well, look, I apparently got kept away from any films because I don't remember watching anything, to be honest. I'm going with The Matrix, which I saw when I was 16, which seems like it's old enough, except I had horrible nightmares about, like, shooting up my town with guns afterwards. So, frankly, I wonder if I was ever of an age to have watched that film. that's what I'm going with.
What about The Room? Do you feel like you're old enough to have watched The Room in the last 6 months or whenever it was?
Yeah, I feel like I'm old enough.
There's no age to be watching The Room, Liz. I'm just putting it out there. There's no right age. There's no wrong age either. It's that type of film.
So obsessed. What do our listeners think?
Yes, let's move on. We're going to start off with our Patreons because they're the most important people. And if you want to become one of the most important people, you can find us at patreon.com/MRITQS. I think something like that. Anyway, there's a link down in the show notes. So the answers we got. Manny Klein, Child's Play. I was about 4. I didn't even see the whole movie, but walked into my cousin's living room during one of the killing scenes and have been permanently scarred ever since. They sold Chucky dolls at Spencer's in the mall. Now, I insist on walking on the other side of the mall. I would avoid certain TV channels around Halloween because they would always have one of the Child's Play movies on Halloween promo. When they made the most recent remake, I literally avoided the TV and movie theaters. Then I found out that the Rugrats attempted to make little redhead heads and striped shirts and overalls not scary again with the character Chucky. Once I put 2 and 2 together on that as an adult, I haven't been able to watch the Rugrats holiday specials the same way.
Poor thing. Like, poor, oh my lord.
I know. Poor Marnie. That sucks. Dan Brennick, as we mentioned on Netflix and Swill, said 13 Ghost, starring Tony Shalhoub. I talk about it a lot, but I was about 11 and watched a dude get unconventionally sliced in half. I don't know if there's a conventional way to get sliced in half, Dan. Anyway.
Yeah, that's horrible.
He says it hasn't fucked him up or anything. He just thinks about that scene from time to time. Brad from The Cinema Guy said Nightmare on Elm Street. I snuck watching it on HBO as a kid and had nightmares about the alley scene with Freddy's long arms for months. Emily Higgins said all the throwing up after the wafer thin scene in Monty Python's The Meaning of Life really haunts me. Why was my dad showing me Monty Python?
You guys have all led such traumatic childhoods. This is terrible.
Yeah, I watched Silence of the Lambs when I was like 10 or 11, and fuck, I didn't sleep right for, I don't know, till about 3 weeks ago. I still don't sleep right. Who am I kidding?
Who were your parents? Mrs. Brody?
No. My parents were around at a parents' place watching it, and I snuck into the room and sat behind a couch, and they didn't know I was there, and then I just watched it and was fucking terrified. Our good mate Abigail said, Braveheart. The house I grew up in had 2 levels. The upper staircase landing overlooked our living room. Dad told me I wasn't allowed to watch it, but I snuck out of the room, looked through the railing to the TV below, and was consequently scarred for life. Was probably about 7 or 8 years old, 20-some years later, and still hate that film. That's what I get for being a disobedient little shit growing up.
Yeah, my brothers wouldn't let me watch that one. I do remember that.
Good. Fair enough. The throat-slitting scene is the... Oof. That was the one...
Oh, I still haven't watched it because I'm assuming it will still make me upset. So, and judging by that statement, it will.
Over to Twitter. We got a ton of responses on Twitter, so we're going to try and fly through them as quickly as possible. We Need a Rhodes podcast said an American werewolf in London messed me up for years. I was 9 or 10 and had to sleep on the couch in the living room because of the paint fumes, and my dad was watching it on TV. The forest scene scared the piss out of me. Canadian Spirit podcast said I watched Akira when I was just 7. Randall Parker's Film Club said Super Rod. Cooking with Grief podcast said, I don't know if it counts, but the original It, which was like a TV series. Yeah, it counts, man. Didn't help that every time we walked past a drain, my parents would go, they all float down there. Those parents sound horrendous. Gillian Ashton said, my mum decided to watch The Exorcist with my aunt when I was 6 months old. She thought I was asleep and looked in the pram. And according to legend, I was wide awake and just staring at the TV. My dad insisted we watch Army of Darkness and Darkman once. Quality 80s/90s parenting.
Jeez Louise.
Louvers
said, I'm being traumatised just hearing these stories.
Good. Luva said, definitely the Nightmare on Elm Street series, the music and the visuals. Nostalgia Cast said, my mum worked as a Tupperware dealer to support us when I was a kid and rented movies as my babysitter. One of my earliest movie watching memories was the night she rented Friday the 13th and Lethal Weapon when I was 10.
Oh my gosh.
Jesus. I love these answers. Derek Fox just said, terrible. The Thing. Rod South said, Psycho. Alice Oliver said, watching Jaws, The Shining, and Alien all before I was 10 years old, and it had quite an impact. I was scared of the dark well into my teenage years, and I'm still absolutely terrified of deep water.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yes. Film Floggers said, this fetching chap wobbling down the street gave me a nightmare of 10 at the ripe old age of 4. Thanks, Dad, for falling asleep and leaving me at the mercy of late night TV, and he has a gif of Freddy Krueger, so watching Nightmare on Elm Street at 4 years old. Fuck that.
No, that's insane.
David W. Poole said, I first saw Alien when I was 9 and still managed to grow up fairly normal. It remains one of my favourite films. Caitlin Moore said, my grandpa watched my sister and I when we were young and would have us watch movies we wanted to watch. I saw Jaws when I was probably about 3 or 4 and The Shining when I was 10. Also, our aunt showed us so many made-for-TV true crime movies like Fatal Vision starting at age 5.
Like, what were you trying to achieve, parents? I don't understand.
Know. I don't get it either. Everybody's parents sucked.
Yeah, man. I know. I'm really grateful for my mother who was just like, you can't watch Melrose Place because it has too many adult themes. Like, I'm going to watch anything. Thank God.
She told you that when you were 17 or something, eh?
No. 12.
Sure. Gyllenhaal Gull said, watched Alien. I must have been between 7 to 10 with my dad and I loved it. Duty from Shaken Not Nerd said, I was, I think, 10 when I watched Resident Evil. My only exposure to zombies were The Simpsons. And seeing Resident Evil freaked me the fuck out. For a good 5 months, I slept with the news channel on and dogs in my room. Also, yeah, I don't like the beach because of Jaws.
Wow.
Unloaded questions. Tara watched Halloween way too young while she was babysitting, even though her mum specifically told her not to. Had to sit outside the kids' rooms the rest of the night till their parents got home. D. Chantry said, Jaws, same for me. Was taken to the pictures to see the original release. I was 8 and it scared me shitless. Took me years to swim in the sea. Luke, good old Luke Human. I was shown Raiders of the Lost Ark when I was about 6, and the image of a melting tote haunted me until Mola Ram pulled out some dude's heart a year later. Spoilers for them. I'm saying spoilers for them. I mean, everyone's seen the Indiana Jones films except for Liz, right? Is that right, Liz?
Mm-hmm. I was about to say I haven't, but I already knew there was a melting face, so that's fine.
Excellent. M from Verbal Diorama said that she watched Commando as a young kid with my dad. Watching Arnold Schwarzenegger movies was just something we did. It's 18 rated for strong violence. I don't think it affected me, but this is how I get ready to go out nowadays, and it has the scene where he's just suiting up with a whole bunch of weapons.
Nice.
Andrew Scoville said Jaws, Rocky Horror Picture Show, The Gates, basically everything from the early 80s. Knights of Dystopia podcast said, my dad took me to see Jaws at the drive-in when it came out. He also took me to see Scanners, and that just jacked me up. The FJ podcast said, Marathon Man, I was 8, and I still hate going to the dentist. Epic Film Guys said, I watched Deep Throat at age 5 and never turned back. I knew what my lifelong goal was. Jesus, that might be the winner. And our mate Waffles said, The Mummy. Yeah, that movie's fucking terrifying. Craig Beard said, Gremlins scared the hell out of me. And the last one is from Paul from the Countdown Podcast. Countdown Podcast will be on very soon, along with Gidget von der Rohe of Retro Cinema, to do Escape from New York. And that's about it. Thanks for Stacey. She's just texting me to say thank you for me. So there you go, listeners. She's still thinking about you guys, even though she's no longer on the recording. But yeah, that's pretty much it. You got anything else you want to say, Liz?
No, I think we've covered it all.
I feel like
And I can go back to lying on my couch.
Fair enough. Makes sense. Anyway, thank you everyone for joining us on this. And thank you so much to everybody that submitted your answers on our listener question. We love it when we get great feedback. And that was pretty damn awesome of you all.
For sure.
Yeah, looks
and
like
all
we
go and get therapy. Like, holy crap balls. You are all traumatized.
If you want to get in contact with us, you can find us on Twitter at Movie Reviews In, or you can send us an email at miritqs@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can find us on Instagram, Movie Reviews In 20Qs, and yeah, we've got all the socials down below. As I mentioned, Escape from New York is going to get an episode on it, so Space Jam, which is probably going to come out next week. Cool. Anyway, that's thanks from me.
Thanks from me.